Florida will elect a new governor this year. This morning, we kick off a series of conversations with the candidates. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to get our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and through the WJCT app. Just ahead, Democratic candidate for governor Gwen Graham steps into Studio 5 to talk about her campaign and take your calls. Get on the line now with your questions for the candidate. The number to join the show, 549-2937. Then later, it's First Things First, a look at a local exhibit celebrating free speech and the power of the First Amendment. Plus, you won't believe this one. It's a bowling tournament for the blind. Yes, right here in town. We'll tell you how that's going to work. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, she's the well-regarded politician and daughter of one of Florida's most popular former public servants, former governor and Senator Bob Graham. Gwen Graham spent a term in Congress as a Democrat in a fairly conservative Florida district, and she now hopes to follow in her father's footsteps and become governor of Florida. If she succeeds, Ms. Graham would be the first Democrat elected to serve in the governor's mansion in more than 20 years. This morning on the program, we kick off a series of conversations with the candidates for Florida governor. We hope to have all of the major candidates on the show through this year. And we begin with Gwen Graham as she joins us now in studio. Ms. Graham, good morning and thanks for being here.
Good morning and thanks for having me.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about the Florida governor's race? It is underway with a vengeance here in 2018, with a primary in August and the general election in November, as, of course, Governor Rick Scott is term limited. Who will get your vote for governor? What do you see as the biggest issues in this campaign? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937 as we speak with Gwen Graham, Congresswoman, former Congresswoman Gwen Graham this morning. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and we welcome your comments on our Facebook page as well. And so, as I mentioned, you are a former Congresswoman, the daughter of Bob Graham, and you, some time ago, threw your hat in the ring to run for Florida governor. What made you decide to do it?
Well, Melissa, my love and commitment to the state of Florida is what drives me every day. And I want Florida to be the best that it can be for all Floridians. And so my commitment to public education, my commitment to our environment, my commitment to growing an economy that works for all Floridians, and my commitment to ethics and transparency in Florida, our state government, is what's driving me every day.
Your commitment to ethics and transparency,
yes.
Do you feel that's lacking in the state of Florida?
I absolutely know it's lacking. And we need to bring back a commitment to the sunshine laws in Florida and that our state officials are held to the highest standards.
Now, if you are successful, first to win the Florida primary, you have a number of opponents there like Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum, former Miami Beach Mayor Philip Levine. If you win the primary, you'd face off most likely in the general election against either a Republican Agricultural Commissioner Adam Putnam or North Florida Congressman Ron DeSantis of this area. He is now running for governor. Let's begin with the primary. Why are you the best primary candidate for Democrats?
Well, what I bring to this race is I'm not a career politician. Didn't ever expect to ever run for office, but when I made the decision to run for Congress in 2013, it was because I recognized that our politics has become so divisive. And I think we need to get back to having those who serve the people of Florida. And that's what it is. When you're in office, you're serving the people who give you the honor of being there. And we need to get back to an ability to talk with one another and work through the important issues facing Florida. So I'm a mom. I'm a former PTA president, public school official, and served our state in Congress. And I look forward to bringing all of those life experiences to being governor.
549-2937 to connect with gubernatorial candidate Gwen Graham. You're a Democrat. You served as a Democrat in a pretty conservative North Florida district. As we look ahead to the general election, Republicans have held power in this state for over 20 years. The other day, you released a video basically echoing the Time's Up movement that we saw over the weekend on the Golden Globe Awards, mm-hmm. as women said time's up to when it comes to sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. Your video said much the same, that you think time's up for Republicans in Florida. Why?
Well, I think the imbalance in power in Tallahassee has been detrimental to our state. We need to have multiple voices in the room, and I look forward to being in a governor that isn't ideologically driven, but is driven by what is in the best interest of the state of Florida, and having multiple opinions discussing policy decisions that, as we move forward, will put Florida in a better position in areas such as education, in areas such as our environment. We need to be addressing some of the greatest threats that face Florida. One of those is climate change. And as someone that recognizes Florida as a peninsula, and we see rising sea levels all around the state of Florida, we need to be taking steps to prepare not only for what is a threat, but for what is already here. So areas that we have not been addressing in Tallahassee, we, as those that serve the people of Florida, are responsible for not avoiding those issues, but preparing to make sure that the state of Florida is protected.
How would you address sea level rise if elected?
Well, we need to be doing common sense things like making sure that we're dealing with our crumbling infrastructure. It's already here. Coastal infrastructure is being destroyed by the rising sea level. So, again, this is something that is, as the governor of the state, it is your responsibility to take care of.
Now, just this week, you received the endorsement of Ruth's List. That's a progressive women's organization. It works to elect pro-choice and progressive female candidates. Mm-hmm. What would you say to moderate to conservative listeners out there who are open to voting for a different take, but maybe they're turned off by that, but they're not pro-choice necessarily. They don't see themselves as progressive necessarily.
I respect anyone's point of view. And what you will have with me as governor as someone that looks at the facts of all the issues. And I do believe, I'm proud to have been endorsed by Emily's List, which is the national version of Ruth's List. Just got the endorsement of Ruth's List. And I do know that women, everywhere I go, Melissa, this was even pre the Me Too movement. Everywhere I go, women are out in force and they're engaged. And again, in a bipartisan way. I had an event in Fort Lauderdale recently, and I had some women arrive that I didn't recognize, and I wasn't expecting them to be there. And they came up to me and they said, "We heard you were going to be here, and we're Republicans, but we can't wait to vote for you because I think women are ready to address the imbalance of power between men and women." I think that that's something that is one of the causes, if not the primary cause, of the Me Too movement. And they're also ready to have someone in office that's just looking out for the people of Florida as well as the state of Florida.
Florida's a closed primary state. Will you encourage Republican women in the state to cross over and change parties to vote for you in the primary?
Absolutely. I would. Anybody who is listening, who is a Republican and recognizes that as governor, I'm going to be working hard for them and working hard for everybody across the state and doing what we need to do to put Florida in a better place for the future. We need to be planning for the future of Florida. And I think that the opportunity to vote in the primary is one that I would encourage anyone to register as a Democrat that would like to support my candidacy.
You, the other day, delivered a $1,200 check, a personal check, to Governor Rick Scott in your quest for public records surrounding the deaths at a Hollywood Hills nursing home in the aftermath of Hurricane Irma. Supporters cheered that. Critics called it a stunt. Why'd you do that?
Well, we had put in a public records request following Irma because I know I have practiced law in the area of public records law, and I firmly believe that the voicemails that the governor received on his personal phone are public records, and very concerned that this administration, Governor Scott's administration, has made a mockery of our sunshine laws. And so I believe that the people of Florida deserve to know the full story of what happened around the nursing home deaths. And $1,200, and I wrote a personal check, $1,200 is a very small price to pay in order to get that information. And we're going through the documents now. There were literally 41,000 pages of documents, I believe, or 41,000 documents, one or the other, We're going through them and are considering additional legal steps if, in fact, what should be included in that public records request is not included.
And, of course, the governor did take criticism for that aspect of how Florida dealt with the hurricane. At the same time, Governor Scott overall got pretty high marks for his handling of the storm. He will also most likely go on to challenge Senator Bill Nelson, as he's term limited as governor. And the Republican that vies to succeed him is going to probably say, well, look, Governor Scott created jobs. The Republican way is working for Florida. Don't change parties in the governor's mansion. You know, what's your response to that argument?
We must do better. I mean, there are way too many Floridians in this state that are really struggling. We must do better with providing quality public education for every child. Every family deserves to have the support for their child across the state of Florida. We must do better for our environment so that we're protecting our environment. This never used to be a partisan issue. So Democrats and Republicans used to come together to support our clean beaches and our clean springs, and working to preserve the Everglades, and again working for climate change. This would be something we're working together on. We must have an economy where no one has to worry. You know, how many jobs do I have just to be able to survive? When I hear Rick Scott say jobs, 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 to me, that says, yes, you're going to have to work three jobs just to be able to have enough resources to put food on your table and make sure you can get the health care that you need. So there are so many challenges this state has. And I know as governor that growing the economy is something I'm passionate about. But it's not just about focusing on growing our jobs, which is very important. It's about having a state that provides all of the support that allows our economy to grow, like, again, education and our environment. I want the future Amazons to want to come to Florida because we're the best place to be, that we're providing that trained workforce.
How will you improve education when raising taxes is never an easy sell for any group of voters? How will you put in place policies for environmental protection, again, with revenues not where most analysts say they need to be to really make a serious stab at those efforts?
We have an $80-plus billion budget, Melissa. And I know that within that budget, there are many places where we could look to redirect resources. And as governor, I look forward to doing a deep dive in the budget, seeing where we're spending resources that are not in the best interest of Floridians and redirecting those resources.
Let's go to your calls now for candidate for Governor Gwen Graham, former Democratic congresswoman here in Florida. She is the first major gubernatorial candidate to join this program. And all through this year, we hope to host all of them on the show. We're going to ask them all, that's for sure. Let's go to your calls now at 549-2937. Jerry is in St. Augustine right now. Hi, Jerry. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Hi, Jerry.
Yeah, go ahead, Jerry.
In response to your statement earlier about how would people vote. First of all, I'm glad Ms. Graham is in the race. I admire her dad. I have been a Republican ever since I was able to vote. I am now retired. That's how long it has been. But I will vote against anybody who aligns himself with a person in the White House who has demonstrated total ignorance about things like the environment, among many other things. So that's my take on it.
All right. Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Now, obviously, you're going to want to turn out as many Jerrys as possible. People that are very unhappy with the current White House. Mm-hmm. And that's going to motivate their vote. And these elections come down to turnout. Which side can turn their people out? And so how big a factor do you think that will be in this race? Because Republican voters will be motivated to turn out to support their candidate, too.
Well, I think the political dynamics of our country certainly will have an effect. But what I really want people to do and know is that they want them to come out to vote for me and for what I'm committed to doing, for what we can do together to make Florida a better state for all of us. And so as we campaign and I'm talking about all that I'm committed to doing, and this is my commitment. One of the things that really concerns me in today's world is that people promise so much, right? If someone's running for office and they promise the moon and the stars, I want people to know that what I'm committed to doing is what I am going to do as governor, and also that I'm providing a pathway to how do we get there. I think that that's what the people of Florida should be entitled to know about those that are running for office.
Let's go to CC now in Orange Park. Hey, CC, thanks for holding. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to say what I've heard so far, I really like. I can say that for me, one of the most important issues, and I hope I don't cut out here, I'm in the parking garage. One of the most important issues for me is the climate and is climate change. I think that climate denial is dangerous, especially in a state like Florida, where the rising sea levels could cause our state to disappear if we do nothing. And I believe that's important. I also believe very strongly in a qualified woman. Women have been cleaning up after men for eons. And I believe that just from what I heard so far, I like Gwen's commitment, Ms. Graham, sorry, her commitment to public education. I like her commitment to the environment. And I'm sorry, but I like the fact she's a woman. And I want to know how to get involved with her campaign.
Well, thank you so much, and please call me Gwen, and if you don't mind, if there's someone that gets on this call after you are disconnected and could potentially get your information, that would be terrific, and we will reach out to you.
Just give us a call back, CC, and lots of calls. Lee is in St. Augustine. Hi, Lee. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you doing?
Okay, thanks. Go ahead. Hi, Lee.
Good. Hi, Gwen. I am a 32-year educator. In Florida, primarily in Florida schools. And what I am seeing here, especially in St. Johns County, is the fact that we can't build our schools quickly enough to accommodate all of the students and all of the influx. And of course, I'm going to say that we can't pay our teachers what they're worth. But what can you do as governor to try to repair some of this situation?
Well, thank you very much. I am honored to have worked in the public school systems for quite a while. I work for the school district in Tallahassee, and so I know firsthand the challenges that the education system has faced in the last 20 years as there has been an attempt to privatize our public schools. So there are a lot of steps that I am committed to taking to rebuild our promise to public schools and to all of the students. Most students go to public schools, and every child deserves to have a quality education. And I think some of the common sense things we need to do is, first, I'm going to end this high-stakes testing.
No more standardized tests in Florida?
No. Testing is important, and we need to have a way of making sure that our students are learning. And let's put this back in the hands of the teachers, who can use the information from testing to make sure that they're adjusting their education plan for their students. But right now, that high-stakes testing has gotten out of control. I'm doing work days. I don't know if anyone listening knows what work days are. It's something my father has done throughout his career. He's done 408. I'm about to.
He would do someone else's job for the day.
I'm doing that as well. I will do 49 as of tomorrow. I'm going to be doing a work day with the Volusia Sheriff's Department. And I will do my 50th in Miami at a craft brewery. I'm very excited about that. But I have done a lot of work days around education, and I have had firsthand experience with students with tears in their eyes saying, you know, I have great, great dreams for myself, but I am terrified of these tests. There's so much weight that's put on them. We need to open back up our education system so that kids can go to school and have a joy of learning, and that we're providing testing that's actually helping the teachers address the issues that they need to with their individual students, but is not, right now, that testing is primarily used to determine funding for the schools, which is just wrong.
With a pro-privatization, pro-standardized testing leadership in Tallahassee in the State House and Senate, if you were elected, how would you take them on? Because you would be ideologically on the opposite side of this issue from the power center at the Capitol.
Well, I appreciate that question because I hear that quite frequently. You know, and I look forward to working with the Republicans in the State House and the State Senate. But make no mistake, Melissa, My commitments to this race, with public education and education being at the very top, I look forward to working together. But these changes will be made because they're in the best interest of the students all across Florida. And with my background in public education, I know what needs to be done.
How would you specifically battle the interests in Tallahassee that, frankly, have a completely different viewpoint than you on this?
Well, as I travel around the state, again, this is in a bipartisan fashion, people are fed up. They're fed up with what's going on with the schools. So I will have the support of the people of Florida from one end of the state to the other in my commitment to education. And again, I look forward to working with the legislators, but if they are unwilling to work with what the people of Florida want, then we will have to deal with it in a way that I am willing to line item veto any special project that is in the budget until we get back to the table to do what's right for the people of Florida.
In other words, you're going to the mattresses on education.
They're my commitments in this race are not just words. They're what I am going to do as governor for the people of Florida.
Lots of calls for Gwen Graham. Milt is on the west side now. Hi, Milt. How are you?
Yes, good morning, Mrs. Graham. Would you consider reinstating some form of growth management or growth management process in Florida's governance?
Absolutely. The dismantling of growth management has been a real travesty for the state of Florida. I am pro-development and pro-growth. Don't get me wrong. But we need to do it in a smart way. And we need to take into account the environmental impacts of development. And we need to get people back on water management districts that actually understand about water and water quality. We need to be taking the steps to make sure that we have people involved in these decisions that can make smart decisions that will be allow development to continue, and that's something that we absolutely want, but protecting what is most precious in Florida for the future.
Lots of tweets and emails coming into the show now. Here's one for you from a listener. What will your guest do about the stalled medical marijuana bill? What are her views on medical marijuana?
I am very pro-medical marijuana. I'm very pro what the people of Florida have said they want done in state government. And we have, unfortunately, a long history where the people of Florida have spoken very loudly about what they would like to see done, and then the legislature just ignores it. The medical marijuana happens to be one of the latest, but we have other examples, such as Florida Forever, where there was a constitutional amendment saying we wanted resources to purchase sensitive lands and waters in Florida, and the state government has just ignored it. One of the earlier ones was the Florida Lottery. For those listeners who remember the promises that were made about the Florida Lottery, that the resources were going to be used to actually add additional funds to our school system, and instead those funds have been supplanted in the state budget, and the state budget now is 15% less than it used to be in support of education. So it's time that the people of Florida were actually listened to, and medical marijuana is one of them. And as a mom, anything that can alleviate pain for someone that's suffering, I support, and we need to work to make sure that the voices of Florida is heard in this issue.
Now, when it comes to this issue of legalizing marijuana, of course, Orlando attorney John Morgan is the guy that pushed that hard in this state and spent millions of his own money to get that passed into law. He very publicly over Thanksgiving announced he's leaving the Democratic Party and registering independent, and he left the door open a crack to running for governor himself. Are you worried about his candidacy?
John is a friend, and I know enough, and if he's listening, I know enough not to try to predict what John's going to do. So
he could slow your roll.
So I will leave that to John to decide. And again, what I'm committed to doing is just waking up every day and speaking with the people of Florida and having them know what my commitment is to them to build a better Florida for all of us.
Here's one more email for you from Bill in Jacksonville. What issues do you feel are most important here in Northeast Florida?
Well, first of all, let's just talk about the Jaguars.
Yeah, how about them?
I mean, right now, I watched that game on Sunday, and I was just thrilled, and I'm looking forward to the game next Sunday. I think that's probably the issue that most people are thinking about and talking about today. But again, I think growing the economy, continuing to grow the economy here in Jacksonville is critically important. I know you have very, very significant infrastructure issues that I believe the state of Florida should be working hand in hand with you on. I also think we need to, as we are the third largest state in the country, we need to be using our influence in Washington to get resources here into the state of Florida for infrastructure improvement and growth.
Particularly in the aftermath of Hurricane Irma, the city saw historic flooding.
Mm-hmm. I know. It was really something. I saw the photos and everything, yes.
Okay. Final thoughts then for our listeners. And as I've said throughout, we hope to have all of the gubernatorial candidates on this program.
Mm-hmm. I hope you do, too.
Yeah. She's Gwen Graham, Democratic Florida candidate for governor. The primary is in August. The general election is in November. Ms. Graham, thank you for being here.
Is it over?
Yeah.
Melissa, can I stay longer?
Unfortunately, there are other guests in the green room, but okay. I hope you'll come back.
I would love to. Thank you for the opportunity.
And
go Jags.
Thank you. And we will extend invitations to all of the candidates to join the program. We're working on that right now. Much more still ahead later, a trip up to Jekyll Island for some hidden treasure. But up next, local artists celebrate free speech and our precious First Amendment. Back in a moment.
Hendrix Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Calling all educators. WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, February 10th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 and 2017 events will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues, learn new ways to engage students, and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets today at wjct.org/teach.
We've updated the WJCT app to make it even better. Stay up to date with local and national NPR news from your phone or tablet. Listen live to First Coast Connect or any of your favorite radio programs. Stay connected and informed. Download the WJCT app today. Available at the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. The best in classic and modern blues as part of WJCT's After Hours. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
I don't want no woman telling me what to do.
Welcome back. It's the work of dozens of local artists inspired by the rights guaranteed by the First Amendment in our U.S. Constitution. First Things First is an important and timely exhibit debuting this week at the Karpeles Museum in Springfield. Local attorney and artist Deborah Reed curated this show and joins us now with a preview. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being here. And, of course, you're not going to get out of me about the importance of free speech and the free press. This show celebrates the First Amendment. Pretty cool.
It's very cool. The response from local artists has been overwhelming. 27 different artists have created work specifically addressing the First Amendment or related issues. The work is beautiful, provocative, Educational.
Sure. People coming will get a variety of artistic perspectives on this.
Absolutely. You know, the reason that I wanted to have an art show about the First Amendment is because I feel that art opens our eyes and we're able to see things differently. I could talk for hours about the First Amendment and the legal analysis, but actually taking a look at what somebody else has spent the time to translate into another medium, I hope facilitates a civil discourse.
Do you see this as an especially timely effort? Do you feel that the First Amendment is under threat, as some have mused?
Absolutely. The reason that I chose to do this show at this time is because of the current political atmosphere and a lot of uncivil discourse that's going on.
Huh. Now, not only are you kicking this off Friday at the Karpeles Museum, the exhibit will be up for months. And on President's Day, February 19th, you're having a panel discussion about the First Amendment at the same location.
Yes, we'll have the February 19th, President's Day, we will have a panel discussion at 2 in the afternoon. That's to facilitate students who would otherwise be in school being able to attend. We will have a federal court judge, a professor of sociology, Dr. Jeffrey N. Wilder from UNS, and a member of the press. And we will pose 3 or 4 topical questions, put them to the panel, and then ask for audience participation. The night of the show, the grand opening of the show, I don't know if everybody listening, probably not, is familiar with the Karpeles, but it's a wonderful museum. It's a church that was built in the 1890s that's been turned into a manuscript museum.
Right.
And it has a beautiful stage. And on doing the free speech is such an important part of the First Amendment that we wanted to use the stage and speak. And there have been original works created for this piece that'll be debuted by Mal Jones and Barbara Colicello. We also have some local students who will be performing pieces that they've written, some music. I think it's going to be illuminating and it's going to be fun. So Friday night will be kind of the free-for-all happy circus, and then we're going to get down to some real nuts and bolts in February.
You also have one exhibit called Alias Alien. It's an anonymous artist. They used a pseudonym. Why?
Yeah, this piece, I think, just by that statement, makes a really powerful and eloquent statement. The artist, when first invited to be in the show, initially declined. The artist is not a U.S. citizen, and they were concerned that their immigration status could be threatened by speaking out. I think that's a powerful statement.
Hmm. What are some other pieces that have really caught your eye in this thing?
Well, there's a wonderful piece by sculptor Jenny Hager of UNF. She has created an 8-foot steel sculpture, which is a silhouette of her participating in the Women's March in Washington last January. It's created out of steel and it's interactive, and it asks participants or viewers to write on the statue itself what they would stand up for. So I think I love the interaction of it. I think it really gets people to think. There are a number of pieces on freedom of the press. One is by Robin Andrews, a very thoughtful piece called To Power On, Press Control, Alt, and Delete. Control referencing two controls on the press, delete referencing revisionist history. So a lot of people have spent a lot of time, thought, and have some really original, thought-provoking takes on things.
The First Amendment is, of course, the First Amendment to our Constitution. It's one that, let's be honest, progressives hold as dearly as conservatives hold the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. You know, this is something that has become such a matter of concern and debate in this country. What specific examples, you know, motivated you to curate this
this whole exhibit when it comes to the issue of freedom of speech in America?
In addition to being an artist and an attorney, I also teach classes for artists on rights in areas of law that will impact their practice, the First Amendment being one of them. I was asked to do an exhibit at the Karpolis about a year ago, and I immediately thought, this is what I want to do about. The First Amendment is so important, and it's so important for us to understand what it really is and what it really is not and what freedoms it protects. In a mere 45 words, one paragraph guarantees our important liberties of religion, speech, press, petition, and assembly.
And yeah, let me read it out loud. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That is the First Amendment.
And it's amazing how concise and elegant that is to me. My piece, I specifically laid out those 45 words to take a look at them as words, as a starting point. And I tried to like color code things that went together. So I think there's a lot to be learned from the exhibit. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I had a waiting list for artists to get into the exhibit. So that says a lot. And people have really knocked themselves out and done some fantastic work. I hope everyone will come see it. It'll be at the Karpolis Museum. It's up now, and it will be on view through February 27th. You know, please join us at the party this Friday and the discussion on February 19th.
The Karpolis is located at 101 West 1st Street in Springfield. It's First Things First, and the opening reception, as you said, is this Friday at 5 o'clock. Deborah Reed, curator of First Things First. Thanks for being with us.
I just want to mention we have a Facebook events page, First Things First. Thank you so much, Melissa.
You're welcome, and we'll be right back.
Snap judgment means your mother, your kids, the dog, and your boss are just going to have to wait until the story is over. Join me, Glenn Washington, for Snap Judgment. Snap Judgment. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Saturdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Join us Sunday nights for fresh programming beginning at 9 with On the Beam with me, David Luckin, as we spotlight music from the 30s and 40s.
I'm on the beam, time's flying by.
Followed by Taste Test with host Damian Lamar presenting Urban Radio After Dark.
There is a place that I'm saving.
On the Beam and Taste Test, Sunday nights at 9, only on 89.9 FM. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, here's your chance to find hidden treasure on the beaches of Jekyll Island. Yes, a Golden Isles tradition on Jekyll is underway right now. Nancy Kring Rowan is with Jekyll Island Authority, and she's on the line with more about island treasures. Hey, Nancy.
Good morning.
And, you know, I had the opportunity once to go participate in this. It's a cool event that you guys do up on Jekyll Island. You hide these beautiful glass floats all over the beach. How did all of this get started?
Well, you know, the island treasures are glass floats. They're similar to what fishermen once used to mark all their nets in the 1900s. And now Jekyll Island Authority commissions artists throughout the country to create these so that there's a special treasure hunting around our island.
Yeah, and I guess they used to sometimes come ashore and people would find them on the beach and collect them. So now you've sort of taken that and built this amazing annual tradition. These are beautiful works of art, and you sort of hide them all up and down the beach, and not even just on the beach, all over the island, right?
Exactly. It is throughout our island, and each day our volunteers that are called Beach Buddies will hide them throughout, and all our lucky guests will be able to find them. What's new this year is that replacing the actual glass floats that are on the to be hid are plastic globes that contain numbers and instructions on how to claim your island treasure at our guest information center. So once you find this plastic globe, you can exchange it there from any time from 9 to 6 every day at our guest information center.
Why did you make that change?
Just to make it a little bit more fair. So one family per year can collect them, so that everybody has a better chance of finding something.
And you sort of hide them in plain sight. I was up there a couple of years ago, and I didn't find a single one, which may be so bad. But this woman that I was with, she found two because she had sharper eyes than me. They were sort of hidden away in the driftwood on the beach, really cleverly placed by your staff up there.
Yeah, we're very fortunate to have these beach buddies that are able to get out there throughout the day to be able to hide them. And this year we'll be hiding over 450 of these items for people to find. It's so much fun for them.
Yeah, and don't artists from all over the country create these floats? They paint them in all sorts of different designs, correct?
Well, they're actually blown glass. So each is very unique and individualistic. And we're so fortunate to have these people to be commissioned to do this for us. It's just such a unique way to be able to come over and spend time on the island. And not only are you're hunting for the island treasures, but you're experiencing Jekyll Island.
Yes. And for people that have never been to Jekyll Island, it is a unique spot on the eastern seaboard. It's such an environmentally beautiful place. Tell listeners a little bit more about how it's part of the Golden Isles chain, but it's a little different than some of the other islands up there in terms of the lack of development and the natural beauty that you see, particularly when you go beach walking.
It is. Jekyll Island is a state park, and by law, only so much of it can be developed. So we're very fortunate to have over 10 miles of beach. We have a beautiful historic district. We have a brand new beach village that's only been around for a couple of years. We have a brand new convention center, and new hotels are coming up. But anything that is actually built is in a location that already had something built on it prior. There'll be no extra additional construction in locations that are open and free to nature.
Now,
so we're
right.
Very lucky.
And so if people want to capture an island treasure, how much time do they have to get up there and go beachcombing and look?
Throughout the entire month of January and February. So come on out.
Okay. I'm sure you'll get some visitors. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. And we look forward to having you back for another island treasure hunt.
She's Nancy Kring Rowan with the Jekyll Island Authority. Their island treasures hunt is on now. Find some hidden treasure on the beaches or in the dunes or in the forests of Jekyll Island. A quick break, and in a moment, a blind bowling tournament happening in this city. We're going to tell you about that right after this.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Who is looking out for our poorest kids? The Children's Health Insurance Program covers 9 million young Americans, and its future is in doubt. Some states say they expect to run out of funds to cover CHIP in just a few weeks. Is there a fix? And could the introduction of a baby bond help those who have the least? Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air.
Sometimes I think I'm cursed because of something that happened before I was even born.
The Disney Pixar film Coco just won the Golden Globe for Best Animated Feature. It takes place in a small Mexican town on the Day of the Dead, the holiday to honor deceased loved ones. We'll talk with the co-writers and co-directors Lee Unkrich and Adrian Molina. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Among the unintended or perhaps unforeseen consequences of Brexit is the looming cultural break between the Brits and the continent.
Hang on, you know, we are still part of Europe. We're leaving the European Union, but we are part of Europe. We have relationships with Europe. We think in a European way.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, a culture shock in an economic union. That is next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Presenting Next Avenue, created specifically for living life after 50. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue and bookmark the place where grown-ups keep growing.
Welcome back. Finally this hour, blind bowling? Yes. Next weekend, both local chapters for this area's blind community, the National Federation of the Blind and the Jacksonville Council of the Blind, are holding their first annual Blind Bowlers Tournament. We've got a preview with Doug Hansard and Marita Winston. They represent the Jacks Council of the Blind and National Federation of the Blind. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Marita, let's begin with you. I'd never heard of this before. How does this work?
Well, we have a blind bowling event every month in the Jacksonville area, and some participants express an interest in having a tournament. So we decided to have this tournament. Anyone can participate. You do not have to be blind. But in order to level the playing field, we require all participants to wear sleep shades when they're actually getting ready to throw the ball.
Interesting. And so what type of visual will a sighted person have, if any, when they put those on?
Some individuals are sighted. Some individuals are blind or legally blind. So with the sleep shades, they cannot see anything. So that's why we stress when you're about to bowl, then you pull down the sleep shades and then throw the ball.
And Doug Hansard, you're going completely on skill without the visual cue of being able to see the pins at the end of the lane.
Yes, that's correct. And when we do that, it bodes for something interesting, but it is fun, and we're looking very forward to it.
My team
Woo Woo is ready.
Team Woo Woo, all right. And this is something, as I've been learning this morning, these tournaments happen all over the country, but this is the first one to come to Jacksonville, is that right?
That's correct.
And so what's it like, what's the atmosphere like, because you're going to have players that are used to not having sight, mixed in with some sighted players who are getting empathy, I would think, for what it's like to navigate the world without eyesight. Because when they put those shades on and they try to bowl, now they have a new appreciation for doing something like that.
Melissa, this is the goal that we hope to project, that the sighted world will be able to have empathy for what the blind community goes through. And it will be educational for them. Mm-hmm. And we're also reaching out for those who want to be sighted assistants so that they too will be educated. And like I said, it's all about having fun.
Sure. You know, we have a really close tie to your community here in Jacksonville, courtesy of our radio reading service here at 89.9. It's led, of course, and managed by the serene and majestic Michelle Corum.
Yay!
And we have volunteers who come in every day and read publications like the Florida Times Union over a special radio channel that folks can access with a special radio if they are not sighted, so that they can, if they're not able to read the paper, they can keep up with the news through our radio reading service. So this is a cause close to our heart. How can people be part of the Blind Bowlers Tournament?
They can contact me at area code 904 580-6819, and we will be glad to sign them up, or they can come out and be spectators at the event.
And this is January 20th?
Yes.
Which bowling alley are you doing this at?
At the Bowl America, 11141 Beach Boulevard.
Oh, right. Out there in Atlantic Beach, right?
Right off of Beach Boulevard, not far from the University Boulevard.
Oh, Beach and University. Right. Okay, I was all wrong. Sorry.
Also, now, Melissa, we want to also reach out to any local businesses in our area that would like to sponsor this tournament. We are more than welcome to have them come aboard and sponsor it, be participants of it. Even I reached out to City Council yesterday and have them to be participants of it. And so we want to plead to all of our local businesses. If you're interested, the above phone number that was given by Ms. Marita Winston, please call her. They'll be glad to take care of her.
Give Marita a call. It's 519-6588. She's president of the local chapter of National Federation of the Blind. Doug Hansard is with Jacksonville Council of the Blind.
Yes.
And I bet you're going to kick the butt of the people wearing the slip shades at this blind bowlers tournament. I'm just a wild guess.
Just a wild guess.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
This is so exciting. Thank you so much for sharing this with us. What a cool event. Marita, Doug, good luck out there, and thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us on the show.
Have a great day.
You too, and that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchik. If you missed any portion of today's show, listen to the rebroadcast tonight at 8. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.